Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, the podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Welcome to today's podcast. I'm delighted to have with me Catherine Sandland, and we are going to talk about how to make sure your presentation stands out. So this is for people who have a job interview and they've got to deliver a presentation as part of that interview. And by way of background, Catherine is an expert, actually. She's done a TED talk a few years ago, and she coaches aspiring TED speakers. And she also has, for a number of years, run her own successful business, helping people have the impact and influence they deserve. So welcome, Catherine. Anything to add to my intro?
Well, that's quite an opening, isn't it? But really lovely to be here. My business is 22 years old this year.
You're kidding.
So not just a few years old, which is really interesting, isn't it? But yeah, a good part of that is helping people talk to groups, give presentations. And of course, most of us have the opportunity to do that at various points in our life, whether it's when you're interviewing for a job or when you're in that job and you have to talk to other people about whatever it is that you do. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah. You're really welcome. And before we kick off, actually, it just occurs to me, you must have seen quite a change in the last year or so with the pandemic and having to move from delivering face-to-face coaching and courses to online. How's that been, just out of interest?
Oh, well, there's probably sort of two answers to that. One is my own business has changed significantly. So clearly I can't deliver my training or my coaching. So my training of groups or my coaching one-to-one, I can't do that face-to-face. So all of that's had to go online. And that was an interesting process and a good learning as well, because I think it is different, but it's built on the same principle. So it was a good reminder for me that I did know what I was talking about, but sometimes we have to be much more intentional. You know, we have to think, I can't just take this for granted. Granted, I now need to be really aware of my body language, or I need to be aware of my voice, or I need to be aware of my eye contact, which I'd sort of, you know, over many, many years, sort of it just happens quite naturally.
Yeah.
But of course, it is, once upon a time, it was learned. And once upon a time, I was very conscious of it. And so that's been interesting for me as a business and an individual. But I think the flip side to that is nearly everybody has had that been thrown onto Zoom or Teams or whatever it might be. And so now everybody is sort of getting used to, or had to get used to in the early days, of communicating online and through a screen. And as I read yesterday, actually, somebody said, we've suddenly gone from 3D to 2D. And there are implications of how we do that and how we do it well and how confident we feel doing that. So, so the nature, if you like, of presentations and has changed, and the nature of interviewing has changed. And so people are having to deal with that as well. I mean, the plus side of that, interestingly enough, was that quite a lot of my courses now are to organisations or to individuals about how to hold meetings and how to give presentations online. So actually it's been an opening up of business, an opportunity, if you like, which I've been quick to grab.
Yeah, I don't blame you. And there's so much of it around, and you know, sometimes you can be in online meetings and it's not going well, and it's just so painful for everyone concerned. So I'm glad you're out there helping businesses be successful. So so if you've been given a presentation to do in relation to a job interview, what's one of the first things you would suggest someone should do? So they'd be given a presentation, a topic title. What should they do first, do you think?
I think you have to take a broad view and think to yourself, why am I being asked to give a presentation? So it could be that it's the content that you're interviewer is really interested. So in other words, they want to know what you know, or what your opinion is, or what your research is, and therefore they've asked you to present that, you know, in other words, the presentation is the mechanism by which they want to find that information out. So the criteria is the content. But it will be true to say, and certainly for some positions, what they're also wanting to know is, can you present? Because that might be part of the job itself. And actually, the reality is it's probably a little bit of both. If you can present well, then obviously your content will come across much clearer and you come across as a more confident person and more competent person. So it is worth knowing how to do it well. But I think it's worth taking that view, because normally in any other presentation, I would say, know your audience, work out who your audience is, target your presentation to that particular audience. And that's still true. But of course, you've got that added thing in a job interview of making sure you hit the criteria that interview person is looking for. So you've got to be very, very intentional. If they've asked, you know, are you a problem solver? You know, if that's one of the criteria, you've got to imagine they've got a checklist and it says problem solver on it. So whatever you do in your presentation and say in your presentation, they've got to be able to go, problem solving, and tick it off their list, and then work their way down the rest of the list. So I think you have got to think, who am I speaking to as a person, but equally, what's the criteria that they've got on their list, and how can I make sure I include everything in there that will make them tick it off?
Yeah, and I guess for job interviews, it might not always be clear, the criteria, and the sort of presentation titles might be quite vague. But I guess in that case, I would then refer back to the job description and person spec and try and work out what do I need to demonstrate.
Yes, absolutely. So it's using some common sense, isn't it, and saying if it's very vague, they're not actually saying talk about whatever you like, or rather they are, but they underneath that they're looking for certain something. So use your common sense and work out, well, if I were them working for this company, recruiting for this position, what sort of things would I be looking for? And then aim to deliver.
I think that's so helpful, because you know, sometimes you can be given a presentation title and you can just dive straight into answering that, and actually taking a step back before you do, I think is really helpful. And I think that might be something that people make mistakes on. I mean, what are the common mistakes that people do make in your experience?
In job interviews?
Job interview presentations or general presentations,
Oh, gosh, right. Here's a long list. But
let's go.
I'll try and put some big stuff. So we'll put delivery to one side just for a moment. In terms of content, the most common thing is, I think people put too much in. They try to say too much because they want to show everything that they know. They want to come across as the person who is credible and knows their stuff. And so actually what they try and do is they shove far too much in. And the problem when you say too much is that it is likely your audience or the person listening will not take away any of it. You know, if I have 100 things to say in this podcast and I tell you all 100 relentlessly, then actually the chances are what you will remember is very, very little. If you remember 10 of those things, it will be a miracle. If I had 10 things to tell you, you probably remember about 8. If I had 3 things to tell you and I told you it really, really well, you would remember those 3. So I think the mistake people make is they put too much in. The other mistake they do, and I think this is really important for interviewing, is they go on for too long. So most people that I've spoken to go, oh, I've been given a 5-minute presentation or a 10-minute presentation to do as an interviewer. I don't know how I'm going to fill it. But of course they do. And they, because there is no shape to it, no format, there's no structure to it, then what ends up is they end up going over or getting towards the end and suddenly having to start to rush to make their point. It's not really, people haven't thought about what they're going to include and what they're going to exclude, and they haven't necessarily thought about how they would structure it in a way that makes the listener go, got it.
Yes, yeah. And I think with job interview presentations, often the interviewers are doing kind of a whole day worth of interviews and listening to these presentations. And I think any that kind of are slightly droney, for want of a better word, and kind of don't engage will unfortunately not hit the mark, because when you're looking at, oh, I don't know, I guess an average interviewer would look at 5 or more people in a day potentially. So if you're the one that's just droning on and on and on and get
it's interesting actually, because that's really about delivery, isn't it? And lots of people will say to me that they're very worried, they don't want to send people to sleep, they don't want to sound monotonous, and yet they don't always know how to break out of that pattern. And I'll tell you, in my experience, the one thing that will ensure that type of delivery is to have PowerPoint with lots and lots of bullet points on, or a script that's got a long list of things to say. Because when you have that list, that download of information, with the best will in the world, it doesn't matter how varied or exciting your voice is, you will get sucked into what I call list voice. So list voice is the sort of thing that goes, well, I've done this and then I did that. I was responsible for this, responsible for that, did the other. And you can hear it, can't you? Just even though I'm sure your listeners will be able to hear that. And you can hear yourself and think, oh, I don't want to sound like this. But you're stuck. You're stuck because either you have decided to use PowerPoint when you didn't need to, or the PowerPoint slides that you're using are bullet points, so you're sort of stuck to that thing, or you haven't thought about, could I say this in a different way? Could I tell a story instead of just listing? Could I ask a rhetorical question instead of just delivering straight facts or statements? So, delivery is often as a result of poor delivery, is often a result of poor structure. As well. And the thing is this, it's such a missed opportunity. You know, in a recruitment interview, you want them to get a sense of who you are, because they're looking for the right fit for their team as well. So don't tie yourself to bullet points, and make sure that you include experiences that show a little bit of who you are as well. And your presentations will be far more dynamic as a result.
Yeah, and my pet hate is scripts. You try and listen to someone who is obviously talking from a script, and you try and give them a fair chance. But actually, it's really, really difficult for the interviewers in that stage.
Yes, I think if you end up using a script, you will squish your personality, you will squash your enthusiasm, you will hide what you can really add of value to that organization. So there's got to be some middle ground, isn't there? And my recommendation would be you work out the direction of your presentation. So in other words, you know what you're going to start with, you know where you're going to end up. So in other words, how are you going to open your presentation, and how are you going to finish it, which ideally should be the key points that you want to make. And you work out basically the little milestones along the way, so that you can get from one to the other, to the other, to the other, a bit like stepping stones across a stream, if you like. Yeah. And that way, within that, you might, go with the flow if you like to do that. But at least you know where you're heading, and you're going to keep within time, and you're going to reach your destination. And that is what I would say is, well, structured. You've got a framework in place, but you haven't got a script there. Now, if any of your listeners are thinking, yeah, but what about the slides? You know, what then do I put on the slides? Then I would say, well, your slides should only be there to add something to what you're saying. The slides are not your presentations. I don't know if I could underline that in an audible way. The slides are not your presentation. You are delivering it, and the slides are there to help you. And it is tricky on Zoom, I think, because of course, once you put a slide presentation up there, then you become a tiny box, and the recruiter is looking at a slide. They're not going to recruit the slide, you know. So it doesn't matter how much time you spent and made them all look beautiful and pretty. It's what you're saying. So you really need to have a really strong, this is what I want to say, and then you might say, so here's a slide that illustrates that. I achieved X, Y, and Z in my last job. Look at this. If it's about you, or you know, you've asked me for some ideas about your business, and there are three things that I'm suggesting, and you've got a picture for each of those. But you have as few as you can get away with. Yes. Because you want them to connect with you as a person, not with the slides.
That is absolutely true. I hadn't really thought of that. But yeah, the recruiters aren't going to give the slides the job. And I love that. I think I might quote that from now on. And I will always attribute it to you.
Thank you.
But I just think that it's so obvious, but absolutely brilliantly put. So we've talked a little bit about content versus delivery. I guess in a job interview, it's really difficult to balance those, and you need to be hitting the mark for both, don't you, really?
Yes, and that sounds quite a big thing to do. So I would probably change the word delivery to clear. I think your aim in a job interview is to be clear and to be concise. Interconnected, of course. So if you think, I always think of recruitment a bit like, I don't know if you have this imagery as well, but I tend to think of it as a jigsaw puzzle. So if I'm the recruiter, I'm looking to get a picture of whether you can do this job or not and fit in.
Yeah.
And I will seek to get as many pieces of that puzzle as I possibly can. So if you're going for an interview and you're presenting as part of that process, then that's one opportunity to actually add in quite a lot of the pieces. Not just that you know stuff, but that you can talk about stuff. And importantly, you can use your past experience to demonstrate to your recruiter that actually you can do this or do something similar that is transposable, if you like.
Yes.
And that's why I think, you know, when you're thinking about being clear, you could say to somebody, yes, I'm very organised. But actually, what would be much clearer is to say, I'm very organised, and I'll give you an example of what I did in this situation and what impact it had. And while you can do that in written format as well, and you can do it in a face-to-face interview, standard interview, in a presentation, you've got so much more opportunity to add in colour and enthusiasm and, you know, he said this and they said, you couldn't possibly do it. And I thought to myself, I absolutely can. And this is what I did. And I drew on my inner reserves, or I spoke to this person and I persuaded this and I organised this and I set this up. And, you know, you can build in so much more. And if you like, that's more and more pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, other than one piece that says I'm organised. You've now probably got 10 pieces that demonstrate that you're organised, and then they can really get a feel for who you are. So I think it gives you the opportunity to be clear.
Yes, and what you've just done there was very clearly demonstrate the power of storytelling. So you know, you say, oh, well, I'm organised, full stop. I'm organised, blah blah, and then I'm organized and you know, and you start telling the story, and that's so much more powerful, isn't it, storytelling. So I guess that would help add color to any job interview presentations, the opportunity to kind of do that sort of thing.
It does. And actually, just as you were saying that, it reminded me of a story. And this is many years ago, and my husband was applying for a job. So he'd been in a particular, he'd worked in medicine as a doctor for many, many years, and he was coming out of that. And it was that whole thing of, oh, what do I do now? Because it's a very insular. And he was going for an interview for a job, and so we had a practice run, and I said to him, welcome, Mr. Sandland, and tell me a little bit about yourself. And my husband turned around and he went, oh, nobody asks that question. That's a stupid first question, because in medicine they don't. In medicine it's very much, what's the last rotation you did, what's your specialty, blah blah blah. So I said, no, honestly, this is what they will ask you. And he went, no. Yeah. I said, well, let's pretend that they are going to. What would you answer? And he came back from the interview. He said, you will not believe the first question that they asked me. Tell me a little bit about yourself. And the reality is, lots of interviewers still do that, because it's a great opener. It's relaxing. Mm. It sets the context. But it's the one thing that people tend to get quite badly wrong, because it is so broad. Tell me about yourself. I've been on this planet for quite a long time. I've had a business for such a long time. Where the hell do I start? So actually, when you're storytelling, I think one thing that nearly every one of your listeners will need to do is to work out what their story is. in order to say it in a clear and concise and compelling way, whether they're asked to tell me a little bit about yourself, or whether they're asked to present themselves in a presentation, or whether they want to be able to draw on that to demonstrate that they can do the job or and the skills that they've got. So it's working out what's your story. And I think for possibly, I don't know whether you would agree with this actually, I think if you're in a situation where you have perhaps been recently made redundant, actually that's quite a hard question, you know, to answer. Because it's possibly quite sad for you. It may feel very raw. You may feel very bitter. And actually you don't really want that to come across in the interview. So you need to work out, well, what's the narrative that you're going to tell? What's the story? When, where are you going to start it? You know, I could start, I could really bore you to death, Julie, because I could start 22 years ago and talk to you about how I set up my own business. But actually you probably don't need to do that. So I could say I've been in business for 22 years, but for the last two, I've been involved in this industry. So I can skip a good 20 years of my history if you didn't need to know that, and focus on the bit that you did need to know that. Or I, instead of saying, and I have been made redundant twice actually in my life, in my working life, and I could form a narrative around that.
Yes.
And I could look at choices. Yeah. You know, I was made redundant, and so I had a choice to make, and this was the decision I made. Now, when I say something like that in a presentation, then what comes across is my choices and my decisions, not that there's anything wrong in being made redundant, and clearly I would say in my own experience it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
So much of what we're talking about is about preparing, isn't it? So you know, if you are going to have to give a presentation as part of a job interview, if you don't prepare, you're never gonna succeed. And certainly I've been guilty of feeling underprepared for presentations over the years, and it's just awful when that happens and you feel like you're kind of floundering.
I mean, the first thing is, if you find yourself in the middle, suddenly having taken the wrong tack, saying the wrong thing, forgetting what comes next, getting distracted or whatever, and of course these things do happen, I mean, to everybody, then just stop. It's okay, and it will always seem much longer to you than it does to them, because hopefully they are busy thinking about what you've just said to them. So long as you think, well, how can I be getting them to think, then it doesn't matter if you stop. And it's really important that you do, because otherwise you do what I call mentionitis. And mentionitis is that bit that goes, oh my God, I've just suddenly forgotten what I'm going to say. Just a minute. Then you're rustling through papers and, oh, just a minute, it's here somewhere, it's here. Just and I put the wrong side. Oh my goodness! Just shush. And sort it.
They might not have noticed any of that. They don't need to know.
But I think I go back to give yourself a really simple framework, like the stepping stones across the river, because then even if it goes pear shaped, you know where the next stone is in the river. So even if you miss a bit out, you can get to the next milestone, and then that will often kickstart you onto the next leg of your presentation. So if your listeners are looking for a really simple structure, this will sound like the bleeding obvious, but have a beginning, have no more than three subsections, so no more than three ideas, if you like, that you then want to move on. Have an ending, and the ending isn't "that's me, thank you, are there any questions?" The ending is something that is built up to a big finale. So if you've made a recommendation, then what's the basis of that recommendation? If you've done an analysis of something, then what's your findings from that something?
So end
on a high, if you like. But just keep to three things. Then that way you're not going to get completely lost. And it will help you. You will come across as much more structured. And you could, at a bare minimum, just number them. So good morning, big opener, you know, whatever it is, like we call it a hook, actually. And then there are three things you asked me to analyse this problem. There are three things that I'd like to say about this problem. Firstly, now that was the first issue. Now let's move on to the second area of this analysis of this problem. Now these two are very important, but this third bit is even more important. And then you have an ending.
I'm just
giving that as an example, but you see where I'm going from. Just keep it really, really simple. Really simple. Yeah. And then you can't get lost within that.
I on the numbering point, I, as someone who listens to presentations, as anybody does, one of the things that irritates me beyond belief is when someone starts numbering and they say, I'm going to say three things, and then they say, firstly, da di da di da, and then they never come back to tell you what the other two are, and so they're covering them, but they're not signposting.
You use the word signposting. I use that a lot in my coaching. Because this isn't just about the content, it's about guiding your listeners through your content. And you can do that very simply. Numbering is one of the examples we've just looked at, but it might be, I've talked to you now about budget, I'd now like to move on to the implementation of this project. So in other words, you're signposting, I've just finished this section, I'm now moving into this section. So these, while they're not content, these actually are almost as important as content, because it makes your presentation what I call tighter. It's easier to understand for the audience, it's easy for them to follow. More importantly, it's easier for them to remember. So you've got to think, in a job interview, they've listened to five other presentations, they've got yours, they've probably got another two in the afternoon. They are not going to make their mind up there and then. They'll just tick off the criteria, but then they'll probably all get together and have a discussion. So you want them to be able to recall your presentation. So it's not just that they have to listen to it and understand it, which is important, obviously.
Yes.
But they have to be able to recall it afterwards. So there's a number of things that help with that. If the clearer the structure and the clearer you've signposted it, then the more they will be able to go, oh, such a body. Oh, yes, Julie, I know what her presentation was about. She was the one who did this, wasn't she? So you make it easier for them to make their decision. If you have a delivery style that stands out from other people, so maybe instead of saying, good morning, my name is Julie, and today I'd like to talk to you about everybody's going to do that. So they'll just all blend into one. However, if you stand up and in your opening gambit is, did you know that such and such a percent of projects fail because of yada, yada, yada? And they go, woo. And they will go, oh, she's the one that interesting fact, or he's the one that told that story, or they're the one that shared with us that experience. So you need to be thinking of, yes, you want to do really, really well in that interview, of course, but you need to make it as memorable as possible for the right reasons.
My view is, don't worry about having your personality come across, because I think as someone who has done a few job interviews throughout my sort of 20-year career, you don't want the drony person, do you? Well, I never do anyway. I would rather someone was a bit more lifelike, even if it's quite a formal role. I don't know. What do you think about personality coming across?
Definitely personality coming across. Absolutely. Because, you know, there's no point pretending otherwise. Apart from it, you can't pretend to be anyone else, because everyone else is taken. I think it was Oscar Wilde.
I love that. Yeah.
but also, you've got to work out whether this job is the right fit for you as well. So you've got to try and work out sort of that connection and response with whoever's interviewing you, and the idea of you know, where the company fits. But yeah, definitely, personality will make you stand out. Now, it was interesting as you were saying that, and just something that's been going on Twitter, I think, just recently, actually. But that doesn't mean to say you have to be loud and fast all dressed in lycra and bouncing around the stage, or, you know, whatever. You don't, that's not what everyone's personality is about. Presentations do lend themselves to the extroverts of this world, but that doesn't mean to say, if you are not an extrovert, if you are an introvert, for example, that you can't do a brilliant job. at presenting. And that you can't come across very, very well on a screen, for example. It might take more preparation and it might take some mindset stuff to get yourself in the right state to be able to do that. I get that. But you don't need to pretend to be somebody that you're not. You will come across as more authentic. Well, obviously, you will come across as more authentic if you are yourself. Yeah.
And I think practicing is key to feeling comfortable with your presentation. And it's the sort of thing that can be quite hard to prioritize. But it's critical, isn't it? I think if you don't practice for a presentation for a job interview, which is potentially really important, then you're doing yourself a massive disservice, aren't you?
Hugely. You will either mess up or you will miss out. But I think, because you knew there was going to be a but there, didn't you? I think it's how you think about rehearsing. I think there's a very traditional, conventional view that says rehearsal is let's write your presentation or get it right, do your slides, all the rest of it, and then start to say it out aloud. So just go through it in order to become familiar with it and to polish it. And I would argue that's not always a very helpful approach. And what will tend to happen is you will run out of time. So you will, and I see this time and time again, people have whatever time they have available to prepare. They've spent far too much of it doing slides and writing scripts and all the rest of it and practicing inside their head. And then, you know, surprisingly, they sort of run out of time to say it out aloud and they go, oh, I didn't really have time to prepare. Well, that's not true, actually, is it? It's how you've used your time to prepare. So I don't use the word rehearsal. I tend to use the word, right, sound it out. So three stages. Sound it out. So as you're pulling it together, sound it out and see whether you're going to include it or not include it, or whether you're going to include it as a series of statements, or instead you're going to tell a story, or you're going to give make a big, bold statement, or in fact you're going to give an example. So you sound it out even before you've got it all together. And then the second stage is what I call stumble through. So stumble through is quite a painful process, but it says, right, I'm going to say what I've got. And it will be probably awful. It will be ums and ahs and trying to find where you are and, oh, I've scribbled bits out and come back to it. And sometimes because people find that painful, they can not do it, or they do it and they feel really demotivated. They go, oh God, this is so rubbish. But actually it's a really important part of getting it right. And if we understand that, and we call it stumble through, that's literally what it is, just stumble your way through it. Then in fact, it can become a really dynamic part of your preparation. And is I would argue is important. I work with people who are, you know, don't do many presentations, all the way through to people who do it all the time. They strut their stuff on the big stage and even they go through a stumble through. So it's recognizing that sometimes you just have to get it out, and that will test it. It will make sure you will be able to work out whether it's robust enough. And then you can practice it. And practicing is about constantly changing it. You know, polishing it, honing it, getting it smooth, getting used to the fact that it might change. So that if in the event you stumble a bit or it just changes for whatever reason, you're not going to be, oh my God, it's a disaster. You're just going to go, oh, I'm used to this. I'm used to changing things on the spot. But you'll find that obviously the more that you practice, the less that you will lose your way and the less that will happen in the real world. But you sort of need those stages. So you need the sound out stage, you need the stumble through stage, and then you need that practice. If the word rehearsal sends you cold, just don't rehearse. Do your sound through, do your stumble through, do your practice instead.
Do you know, I think the whole stumble phase is really important to recognise, because I've been guilty of getting to that point and then I just go, I can't do it. That's it. I can't do it. And of course, we all can do it. It's not impossible for anybody to present, but you've just got to get through that stumble point. I really sympathise with any listeners that are feeling that they're up against a brick wall. You you just have to work through it. And it's probably, well, in my opinion, for what you've just said, the most important part of it, because if you get through that stumble point, then if you do lose your way when you're doing it for real, you've got that experience to fall back on.
And what you're doing actually is just getting really good at expressing yourself and being clear. You know, we can all say things inside our heads and they sound amazing. I mean, sometimes, you know, the presentations in my head are just blooming awesome.
Yeah, mine too.
And then suddenly something happens, you know, and I do this for a living, but, you know, something happens, you open your mouth and you go, oh, no, that doesn't sound right. So it's really important to do that. But actually, it's a really creative process as well. How can I sound the way that I want to sound? How can I express this idea as clearly as possible? Because when I open my mouth and this comes out, it's really not very clear. Is there a different way? What would happen if I did? So it's almost approaching it in a state of curiosity rather than I've got to get this right, I've got to put this fact across. It's how do I, why would I, how does this sound? And of course, if you have a trusted somebody to listen to you, then that's great. I emphasize trusted, because what you want people to do is to give you constructive feedback, not to take over your presentation, and certainly not to demoralize you. So you want somebody who can say that worked really well, or if you did more of this, that would be much more effective, or why don't you start doing that? Now, I think they're the only bits of feedback that you ever need to listen to. If anyone says, don't say that, or that was rubbish, or that's wrong, really you need to just filter out that feedback. It's not helpful. But feedback that goes, this bit worked, you need to do more of this, and you could start doing that. Now, that's really what I call future-paced feedback. It doesn't matter what I call it, though. It's stuff that will help you get better.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you ask your partner, for example, you think, well, they are trusted because I tend to live with them. So tell them how you'd like your feedback. I only want to know what went well. And if you think there's stuff I could do more of, and if you think there's stuff I could start, tell me about that, because I can do something with that and I can make the next version even better.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you don't want, or what I never want, is blind, oh, yes, that was fine, or even worse, that was brilliant, that was perfect, when actually you know it wasn't, and you sort of think, yeah, you're not being honest with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that I ever get that feedback, by the way.
I think you may.
So we've covered an awful lot of different things. Do you have any kind of favourite top tips in terms of presenting, either on the day or preparation, or, you know, what would be?
I do, actually.
Brilliant.
I was thinking about this when you asked me to prepare for today, and I came up with, I mean, there's lots of things. I came up with getting in the right state, because I thought your listeners would find this useful. We can get in a right state about interviews and presenting in interviews. but we want to actually be in the right state. So this is more than mood. It's the energy and the resourcefulness that you bring to that job interview. And it's recognizing we have a series of choices about that. It's not just, oh, my God, I hate doing this, and then you're in that state to deliver, or oh gosh, I feel so nervous. Oh, I feel sick. Where's the bucket? And that's the state that you go into. It's actually recognizing that you can go, okay, do I feel resourceful enough to do my best? And if the answer is less than 100% yes.
Yeah.
Then there are things that you can do to change that state, and that you need to do in order to change that state, so that you are bringing your whole self, your whole concentration, your whole levels of energy and focus to that particular interview for however long it lasts. And so there are things that you can do. One of the things that people think is a bit strange, but actually is really important, is about posture. So it's how, what you are doing and with your body. And what you tend to find is if you're nervous, for example, we all tend to tense up. And some people it's their shoulders, the back of the neck. For some people it's their thighs or their toes, you know, that tense up. And it's just paying attention and going, right, well, what's happening with my posture? And if necessary, roll the shoulders. If necessary, you know, put your head to one side. If necessary, focus on your toes and uncurl them. And make sure that you have an upright posture, whether you could be seen or otherwise, you know, feet flat on the floor, posture, good tall standing state if you're standing. If you're sitting on a Zoom, then make sure you're upright. All that sort of stuff, because we know that, and there's lots of evidence that suggests that when we change our outward body, it impacts on how we both feel emotionally internally, but there's some lovely piece of evidence that suggests that actually affects your hormones as well. So in other words, when we have a more upright and open posture, then we reduce our cortisol levels, which is the stress levels, and we heighten all those other lovely hormones that make us feel good and confident. So
I love that. That's brilliant. I never knew that. I've interrupted your top tips.
But it's a good one, isn't it? I mean, we probably all know that if we shift our bodies a bit, we feel different. So we can shift the state easily. But yeah, no, there's some lovely pieces of evidence. In fact, there's a TED talk you were talking about earlier by a lady called Amy Cuddy, Cuddy, who shares her research on that. So I think that's one of the things you can do to make sure you're in as resourceful state as you possibly can. The other is to think of focus and the language that you're using, especially inside your head. So for example, if you think to yourself, I hate doing job interviews and giving presentations like this, then your focus is on what you hate. And with the best will in the world, it's really hard to shift out of that. Whereas if you go, this is a way of them finding out more about me and about what I know, and I may not feel very comfortable in this, but it's a great opportunity for me. Can you see the shift in the language gives you more options as to how to behave, as it were? So I think it's just tuning into your inner voice and going, oh, where is it? Oh, could it be different? and making that shift again. So I call this the hand on the doorknob moment. You know, it's a sort of imagine you're about to go into this job interview.
Yeah.
You've got your hand on the doorknob moment. Check in. Check into your posture. Check into your focus. Check into the language. Do what you need to do. Make those adjustments that you need to do to make sure that when you get in there, you are resourceful. And notice I don't say confident, because I think confidence means different things to different people. And it's quite hard to grasp is confidence, but resourceful is much more doable. How can I be more resourceful? What would I just need to do in order for me to feel more resourceful in this situation? And that gives you more tangible things to do.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, loads and loads of good stuff. I've really enjoyed chatting to you today. So what we'll do is we'll put some links in the notes that go with this episode so people can find you if they would like to. It's been fantastic talking to you. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. And for anyone who's listening, who's going for that job interview and giving that presentation, I wish you every success.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.